Welcome to House Talk on News Radio WHAM 1180. This show is a weekly conversation about all the things you should know when buying, selling, or maintaining your home. Join in with your comments or questions. Call or text 222-1180 or 800-295-1180. Now, live from the News Radio WHAM 1180 studios in downtown Rochester, here are your hosts, Jeff Schofield, Mike Reed, and Andrew Schwert.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. This is Jeff Schofield, RE/MAX Plus.
Mike Reed, All County Home Inspections.
Jamie Messner, Premium Mortgage.
Well, the market continues. I think, you know, what we're seeing this year, we've gotten hammered with even fewer homes on the market. I normally don't dig into this that deeply, but it was kind of interesting. I received a flyer where the average sales price, the average price of a home that sold in April of this year across the country was $389,000. I did the same numbers for us. It was, $232,000, which, I mean, is great for real estate people, great for mortgage people, but not so great for home buyers. You know, it doesn't seem like that long ago that the average sales price in our area was $132,000. It's hard for me to tell you, hey, in the last 2 months we've had X number of homes listed, but I can tell you how many in the last, 2 months we've had sold. This year, 1,262. It'd be all residential properties, including condos, single families, multifamilies. Last year, 1,789. So we're down actually a third from last year. I would think that would drive the prices up even higher, supply and demand. How are you doing with inspections?
You know, we're actually doing pretty well. I mean, I think part of it was the pivot that we did to doing the post-sale inspections. We've done 100, and I'm trying to remember the actual numbers because they just changed, 154 or 156 traditional home inspections like you normally do before you buy your home inspection or buy your home, come in and look at it. And then we've done right around 100 post-sale inspections, so people who are having the house looked at to help them budget, prepare, and plan. And I think that was a key component. And I think we did 86 post-offer consultations, and that's where we come through and look at it and look for those big-ticket items that would make somebody decide if they're going to offer or not offer. A really nice statistic of that is over 60% of the people that we have done consultations for have made an offer that was higher than they thought they would have offered before, and about 40% of those people actually got the house. So if you're a listing agent out there listening and you're a little hesitant to have a consultation done beforehand, it has been working to the advantage of the people making the offer because they're a little more educated. It's removed that fear. So, and then the environmental pieces, mold, radon, testing for environmental concerns, that became pretty prevalent during COVID, people understanding a healthy living environment. Let's make sure our home is a good place that we're going to live, especially when you see those numbers that Jeff just said. People are staying longer. So they want to make sure that their house is healthy and comfortable. Wood destroying organisms inspections, chimney inspections, things that people would have just not done. We're doing a lot of those now. So, how about you, Jamie?
Yeah, we're finally picking up a little bit. The first couple months of the year were a little slower than we've seen in the past as far as the beginning of the year. And keep in mind, too, that number, that 1,262, it's not all people getting mortgages. Cash is still a huge thing in this market, and we still have a lot of people getting beat out by cash offers. So we're feeling that lesser amount of this year versus last year, but we are picking up.
We did it. We had a lot of that. We did. We analyzed how much, business we send you guys. And what we found is that, a solid 50% of our offers in the last 2 years were cash.
Yeah.
And I think, and I was just wondering, because a lot of these people beg, borrow, and steal from aunts, uncles, parents, kids to get enough cash to be able to actually beat out the other offers by offering a cash offer. How long does it take them before they can go ahead and refinance? Do they have to age it for a certain period of time?
the standard time frame is 6 months to be on the deed, title deed. So, usually have to wait a good 6 month time frame before you can refinance with a mortgage.
All the things that have changed since COVID, the pre-home inspections, the delayed negotiations, the acceleration clauses, you would think the banking industry would have gone, we've got to shorten that time frame up.
Well, believe it or not, they actually made it longer for investment properties. So now if you have an investment property and you want to refinance, it's 12 months. So I don't know what the logic behind that was, but it's still 6 months to a year.
That's bizarre. You would have thought for investment property, they might have said, hey, instead of the traditional 20-25% down, we'll give you a mortgage for, with 30% down. So we're better protected.
Sure.
But so last time, we ended the show before we got through the whole topic. We were talking about anomalies that would cause, somebody to like scratch their head on a house, before they purchase them. And or what could affect value. And there's a lot of these things where, one of my biggest marketing tools, if I've got an anomaly house, is to do open houses. Now, granted, because if you've got a house that backs to high tension wires, the buyer's agent's going to do their job and point out that and say that'll affect value. As a listing agent, I'm pointing out all the other positive features. But what are those anomaly things we talked about? Train tracks, high tension lines, back into the wall. Along 490, 390, because you walk out and you've got a solid, what are they, 15 feet to extend the back of the property. People kind of go, well, I don't want to hear road noise that you'd have from that. I mean, that was cutting down on road noise. Busy roads, commercial influence. If you're located right next to a gas station, right next to a shopping mall, that could have a negative effect. And other agents are going to be, pointing that out. Contemporary homes. Yeah, we're conservative Rochester. I mean, it's, people still wear white shirts and ties for work. We are very conservative, and agents will tell, their buyers that, hey, there's not as large a population for conservative or for contemporary homes. That's why open houses. I can point out the positive features. They're there without their agent. I guess we're going to interrupt this. We've got a call. Caller, welcome to House Talk.
Hi, Jeff. This is Jeff Metzger.
Oh, hey, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Hey, Jeff. I appreciate your calling. I asked Jeff to call because he's got some, very experienced. I've known Jeff, I think, probably about 30 years now. He had rental properties on Park Avenue, and I was working with somebody that came in. It was a professor at the Simon School, and we just met, hit it off. Jeff's an art enthusiast. I think I bought my first piece of art from him that wasn't a framed poster. And Jeff made a very, very successful career out of buying investment properties. I sold a couple of them for him, and many years ago when he gave up some of the stuff that wasn't as fruitful as, his Park Avenue. But Jeff's got a great, had a great system. He's not the only one, but I never had that system. And I thought I'd let Jeff explain a little bit about renting to college students. So Jeff, go ahead. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, first of all, renting to college students, many of my peers kind of laughed at me. But the bottom line is, when times are rough and people can't always pay their rent, college students have saved money, or their parents have. And even through COVID, we never missed a beat. And my theory always was to start out early and try to fill apartments prior to the vacancy or prior to the end of the lease. So all my apartments started with a June 1st lease, because in our city, a lot of people don't like to move early or move in the wintertime. The warmer it gets, and June seems to be the best month to start a lease when most people are looking. I would start advertising at the end of January, and you'd be amazed, especially at the larger, harder to rent apartments, people look very early. And even with ones and two bedrooms, I would be renting early February, you know, and it's just checked off your list so you don't have to deal with it. And we'd clean them up and paint them right away, and we wouldn't miss a beat. We wouldn't lose month's rent. Many of my friends would plan on themselves, giving themselves a whole month to repaint and clean. And it really shouldn't take that long, especially if you keep the same paint and you have a system of cleaners and painters. Hopefully that will give you some idea of what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was in college, I took a class, it was a seminar, and a guy, financial investor, he talked about buying real estate. He said his thing was always buying in a college town because, the students don't have credit, but they've got parents that are employed. They're writing checks. Parents can co-sign on the lease. You know, I just never followed that suit. I mean, I didn't manage when I had rentals, I didn't manage them that well. I was I was his other type of friend that it'd go empty and then I'd take a month and get it fixed up. I'd start renting it out and showing it out. But, you've had to have saved or made, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars over the years. You had all these units and you didn't suffer the vacancies that most people do.
It's not just vacancies, Jeff. Sorry for interrupting, but when a person is looking at an apartment and it's occupied and they know you have three other appointments that day to show it, even though it might be 3 or 4 months out, but it's occupied, it just always has a better presentation than when you see a place empty. I mean, when I was in school, when I saw an empty place, I thought, well, what's wrong that it's not rented? So I always made sure I showed apartments and showed them when they were rented and made every effort to renew them starting June 1st. And it seemed to work well for me because I didn't carry vacancies. And if you have a number of apartments, if every year you lose a month, you never get that money back.
And you had said to me that, you know, June, I guess we're going to go on a break soon, Jeff. Hopefully you can hold on. Jeff, can you stick with us? We'll be out for about 3-4 minutes.
Sure.
All right. Thanks.
Welcome back to News Radio WHAM 1180 House Talk. Give us a call at 222-1180.
Well, we have Jeff still online. Jeff, you brought up an interesting point when you and I were talking, you know, yesterday, I guess, about, you know, starting to show them. You get the people to commit to either move out or stay, and you show it 2 months early. And a lot of times parents are bringing their kids in for, you know, a tour, but nobody else has started showing their apartments yet. So they don't have that large a selection to go to. Jeff? Jeff, you still there? Jeff, we must have lost you. Call back. I'd like to continue the conversation.
Yeah, well, we wait for Jeff to call back. I have to say he's right on. Like, one of the things that we do is, you know, we got 12 months lease for people, and we start showing it about month 10, because it then puts a sense of urgency in the people that are currently living there on either renew or start to pack, because there are people walking through their apartment or their house. We do pretty much single-family homes, and it makes them say, I either need to sign up or start planning on getting out. And what happens is most people aren't thinking about moving 2 months before it's time to move. And that puts a sense of urgency in them and kind of gives them the old giddy up in their step. So, we get Jeff back?
Jeff?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, perfect.
All right, excellent.
I actually hadn't left. I could hear you. You just couldn't hear me for some reason.
Well, now we can hear you loud and clear. Hopefully everybody out there can too. So you heard what we were talking about a little bit about your, you know, the management of doing it 2 months ahead. I had mentioned that somebody once told me about the parents co-signing. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the rental market. And, you know, you got some great properties. You bought, I think, you know, quite a few of them in foreclosure, didn't you?
Some, but, anything that made sense that had value. Most of the foreclosures were on the west side. There tends to be not too many foreclosures, even years ago in Park Avenue. But I was fortunate that most of my properties, which is the ones I kept for you know, up until 45 years. It's all about location, and the Park Avenue location in the city is probably the best. There are other areas that are up and coming, but Park Avenue has always been the way it is. And it's just easier to rent to nicer people when they know they're going to be safe and be happy. And the values are always there. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, we appreciate your calling. Any final comments you'd like to share with our listeners?
If you're not sure whether to buy, the answer is buy. You can always sell, and the longer you keep it, the more they're worth. And there's really no better investment. And anybody that's in the business will tell you that. So that would be my best advice. If you're not sure, buy. You can always sell it and get out. But you got to maintain it. You got to take care of your tenants. So that would be my best advice. Buy and take care of your tenants first.
And, Jeff had this as a full-time. I think you originally started as a photographer. And you had this as a full-time job for the last 30 years, you know.
I really loved it. Loved all the time I did it. And the more I did it, the more I wanted to do more. And I ended up giving up my photography business and just doing this. And I took care of the properties, as my father told me, and they would take care of me.
And, they did very well for you. Now Jeff's happily retired, living half the time here, half the time in Florida. And, you know, that's what we all hope to do someday.
Yeah. Well, thanks for letting me give you some of my thoughts, and I wish everybody well.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Have a great day.
You too.
So, Mike, you wanted to get into a topic that kind of follows our first topic.
Yeah, it's funny because I had a friend or a Facebook friend send me a reel or a video of some person giving advice on property management, property ownership, real estate sales, and it was probably some of the worst advice I had ever witnessed in my life. And I'm sitting there watching it, and I think my comment to them was, "Are you sure you're not a salesperson for a foundation company?" Because his advice was to rip off all the gutters on your house because they just clog anyways. And I just thought that was absolutely just absurd to say that. Maybe if you live in Arizona when it rains once a year, but here, I mean, you are going to put thousands of gallons of water right against your foundation. You'd remove your gutters. So I kind of went down the rabbit hole of searching this person's videos and the comments that were coming in, and people were singing this guy's praises. And when it came to maintaining a property, he was just wrong. I mean, there are so many things that he had given advice on that just were not accurate. And so I just started doing a little more digging and research, and it made me just realize that you have to really vet your sources. Just because somebody has a YouTube channel and a Facebook page and a Instagram account doesn't mean that they know what they're doing. You really need to kind of step back and find some local professionals, some local help, because that's really what the most important thing is. You can jump on a national platform and get an estimate of what your house is worth, but we all know that they were wrong. That big national company's price points were off considerably. And then you can jump on another national platform and get mortgage rates and the things you need to do to qualify, but they really aren't pertinent to our local information and our local knowledge. So I'm starting to feel more and more I'm in this industry that what we are becoming in the real estate industry locally, you know, attorneys, appraisers, mortgage brokers, agents, inspectors, are verification that what you're finding online is in fact the truth. It's very easy to put out bad information or half information, but when you're sitting across the table from somebody or having a conversation, it takes on a whole different flavor than just a screen. So when we come back from our break at News Radio WHAM 1180, House Talk will return 222-1180. We can continue this conversation.
Back to House Talk on WHAM 1180. Give us a call with any questions, 222-1180. I'm Jamie from Premium Mortgage.
Mike, so, you know, I think a lot of times when people look on the internet, they're just looking to justify their already made up mind on what they think they should do.
Well, absolutely, and that was kind of what my, I don't want to say my aha moment and that was, but it just, it became very clear to me how prevalent that thought process was. I have a thought, and I'm going to find somebody to confirm what I think. Right now, I'm in the middle of reading a book. It's a leadership book, a business book, and the name of it, the title of it is Self-Deception, and the whole book is all about that. Like, we have these preconceived notions and ideas, and we're really not paying attention to the data. We're really not paying attention to what the facts on the ground are. We're reinforcing what we believe and what we think.
You know, for me in selling real estate, I used to always get that, well, my uncle sells real estate in California, and this is what he said. Or my brother's really knowledgeable, he thinks this. And I remember talking to a trauma surgeon client of mine, and he was asking about people questioning me. And I go, well, yeah, that's probably one thing you've got you never experienced. I go, I get questioned all the time. You know, my brother knows this. I read this online. He goes, oh, wait, Jeff, don't even fool yourself. He goes, I get people bringing their kids in with injuries, and they've got 40 pages printed out from the internet. And they're asking me, you know, to like explain everything to him. And he goes, I can either treat your child or give you a medical lesson, but I can't do both in the short amount of time we've got. So I think everybody, and I don't know, maybe it's not bad. Maybe it keeps us, you know, keeps us on top of our game. You know, nobody can wing it. You can't just make up stuff anymore. You've actually got to know.
Well, and I think it's really important that you look local when you start getting involved in anything that you're doing. Is I'll use the example is we operate out of Buffalo and Rochester. We're thinking about moving to Syracuse too. Two completely different markets. What we're going through in Rochester is completely different than what they're going through in Buffalo. In Buffalo, people are asking for inspections. They're getting ancillary inspections. They're getting sewer scans and wood destroying organisms and chimney scopes and. In Rochester, good luck even getting a traditional inspection, making sure the house isn't tipping over. But 60 miles down the road, it's, I don't want to say business like before the pandemic, but it's a lot closer than what we have going on here in Rochester. Also, if you get south of Rochester, east and west of Rochester, into those more rural areas, you know, the Dansvilles, other sides of Rush's, out past Batavia, there's just... You know, we're doing a lot of inspections. We're getting out there. We're spending a lot of time, you know, further from Rochester than we were before. So we see a lot of that.
Yeah, I see the same thing for the on the mortgage side of things. A lot of people will go online, go to a large lender, think that it's super easy because they do. They make it easy, and then they get their loan estimates and bring them to me, and it's not at all relevant to the state and how we do things and taxes and attorneys. And they, yeah, it's a big, big difference sometimes. So definitely local is the way to go.
In my career, since the internet came out, I've seen a lot of bait and switch with internet lenders.
Yes.
You know, I mean, some of them are good. They'll close the deals, but they get the person in there by saying, hey, you're going to get a 3% mortgage. Oh, well, wait a minute. You know, that was assuming you had a 850 credit score and, you know, you were putting 50% down. But, you know, for your specific case, it's now a much different interest rate. I mean, I've had a lot of people that, you know, they come to me and all of a sudden I find out, you know, maybe on my listing, because I'll try to persuade buyers to go to the local lender. And then they find out, you know, hey, yeah, you know, what was the name of the person that you recommended?
Well, and that's why in the commercial break, I love and to reinforce this. I just asked Jamie off the cuff, hey, do you guys do HELOCs? We're thinking about another addition on the house, doing some work. And her advice was, no, don't go that way. Look here. Where if it were a large national lender, they would have just tried to pigeonhole me into a product that they could have sold me that wasn't right for my family, wasn't right for my needs. And sitting here with Jamie, you know, 10 feet from me, you know, first place I went was to ask her, but her advice was, don't use me. You don't get that from a national lender. You don't get that from a national website. It's all about that screen and making that connection point. So.
Well, changing topics just for a second. I got a call this week, somebody asking about the different types of drains for excessive groundwater. You know, and I know you've got French drains, you've got, you know, I don't know where they dig a pit in your backyard and fill it with rocks so it has a place to drain there. Why don't you give us a Reader's Digest condensed version, or take your time on the different types of drains that people see, perimeter drains, all that?
Well, Rochester is a very unique market in the fact that we have houses that are very, very old and houses that were just built. Where you go to Florida, and they're all, you know, within the last 15 years because it's growing fast, and then about every 20 years they have a big storm, blows everything over. So they have a completely different scenario than we do. We do a lot of surface water drainage here. We get a lot of swales cut where it looks like a V around your house where you're just directing away from the house. And then in the mid-70s, we started putting exterior perimeter drain tiles around a house, which is basically you dig around where the foundation is going to go. They drop down to about the footer area, put in a pipe, cover it with stone, and that picks up most of the water that's coming to your house. And then inside the house, we put in interior perimeter drain tiles for the water that gets around the exterior drain tiles. Well, my house, built in 1920, does not have any of that. It's got nothing. It had a dirt floor at one point, and somebody poured a half an inch of concrete over the top of that and said, there you go, now you have a nice basement, where back in the day, you know, basements were dirt. So we now are retrofitting houses, and, you know, interior perimeter drain tiles and systems are the way to go. You wind up digging down to your footer, putting in a series of pipes that take it over to a sump pump and pump the water away. If you're getting a wet basement. On the outside, French drains are really a swale that was cut. You put a pipe at the bottom of it and put stone over the top of it, leaves the top more or less open to that stone. And it does a couple things. One is it drains the water away, and two, it allows for evaporation. If you start putting dirt over the top of that French drain, evaporation from the sun doesn't happen. So it all will be dependent on your lot, what kind of drainage there is around your lot, and what have you done with the surface water? You know, if you took the advice of the guy on the internet and, you know, took all your drains off, now you got to get rid of it from the inside versus the outside. So there's a lot of different styles of drains that'll be really, really specific to what your problem is.
Well, I know years ago, I know this because I took a class on it once, that we had so much groundwater here, you know, that I guess, you know, hundreds of years ago, we were basically all swamp around this area. The course, the guy talked about East Avenue, driving right from Pittsford into the city, used to be referred to as Corduroy Road. Back in the 1800s, they would cut logs and lay them down because there was so much water and rain and mud that, you know, the wagons could, it'd be like riding on top of a piece of corduroy. And oddly enough, we are in an area where most everybody has basements.
Yep.
You know, so that, you know, gives the groundwater someplace to go. You got groundwater coming from outside. You got it coming from up from the basement.
Yeah, and that's what happens a lot of times. Like if you look you go to Irondequoit, like up where I live, our basements are 4 feet in the ground, 5 feet in the ground, and 3 or 4 feet out of the ground. Because we didn't go that deep. Because if you went that deep, you were in the water table. So we adapted to that construction. So if you ever see those houses with that big freeboard driving around, the city has a lot of them too, where you're like, wow, why is there so much stone sticking out of the ground or so much block out of the ground? That's because if they went any deeper, there was water under there. So they stopped at that level. We've just changed a lot. And if you look at looking out the window here, all you see is green. We get a lot of water here. We've gone a nice 2 weeks without a lot of rain, but we all know that that's going to change, and that grain has to go somewhere.
And you might, either of you might not know this, I don't know, but, you know, out of other states, predominantly, they don't have basements.
Down south, a lot of states do not.
Yeah. Why is that? Is that just from the rock on the under the soil? Is it?
Yeah, there a lot of them have a high bedrock area, so you can't go down 8 feet. You go down 6 feet, and all of a sudden you're hitting stone, you're hitting rock, so you don't you can't dig down that far. So there's a lot of slab on grade construction in different areas where we don't have that here. So, that's one of my favorite types of construction, though. If I was going to new build a place, it would be smaller. I would definitely do a slab on grade, you know, a little ranch, something like that. But and I think I hear some music in my ear. We'll be heading out to break. 222-1180 when we return.
here, back with House Talk, News Radio, WHAM 1180, 222-1180. Mike, you and I were talking about final walkthroughs, and one thing that I wanted to try, if anybody's listening, and they're going to be selling a house or they've got a house that's already under contract, don't underestimate the importance of a final walkthrough for the buyer. Generally, I'd say in 99% of the cases, if somebody has a really, really nice house, they keep it nice, you see how they live, then you know, you're going to do a walkthrough with no exceptions. But it's that 1% that can just make somebody, a buyer, feel completely miserable about what they bought. You know, they walk in, it's kind of like getting a new car. They show up to the dealer and it's got a big scratch across the side of it, you know. All of a sudden, your dream, you know, of having this gorgeous red Corvette or whatever it is, you know, now you're like, I don't feel so good about the investment that I made. And I would just say, you know, do a walkthrough, a second walkthrough before you completely move out, and just realize that if you're moving furniture, if your movers are moving furniture out and they scratch the hardwood floor, be proactive. Get somebody in there to touch it up, because the buyers aren't going to walk through and say, oh, yeah, no problem. You know, it's going to be a kick in the gut to them. And we've had deals die because the walkthrough, somebody damaged something. They took something they shouldn't have. So, you know, again, if you're not sure whether you can take that cabinet that's hanging on the wall, talk to your agent before you ever put the home on the market.
Yeah, I think that's one of the critical steps, and even more important than a home inspection. Because we've had, you know, burst pipes. We're going for a walkthrough, final walkthrough, and a basement's flooded. You know, it's especially February. Somebody turned the heat off. Things exploded. We've had clients that had beautiful, brand new stainless steel appliances all throughout the kitchen, and they come in, and the Avogadro green from the garage is now in the kitchen. Also, one of the worst ones, we had somebody leave a back door open, and the local dogs decided that was a great place to hang out for about 30 days, and it was nothing but like being in a kennel. So it's really important that you do a final walkthrough. You can reach out to us at All County Home Inspections, ACHIWNY.com, or 585-773-4001. And we actually have a form that we can send you of all the things that I check on, you should check on a final walkthrough. And most agents have those too. So it's pretty important to have a system when you go through that. You just don't walk in and go, oh, look at this. And part of our home inspection process, we tell people, today's the last day you're going to be here before final walkthrough. And when you come to a final walkthrough, you're not looking at the same things the inspector would look for. You're looking for things that have changed from the day we're here today to the day that you move in. And you're looking for those big things, burst pipes, trees have fallen on buildings, dog doors have been left open, and the house has been filled with, you know, dog excrement. That's what you're looking for. Today is not that's not the day to back away from something, unless something awful has happened to this house.
The other thing to keep in consideration too is, and it's always a stressor for everybody, the buyers in a perfect world would be able to do a final walkthrough the day before closing. The sellers have moved out and the house is empty and they see it, how it looks, you know, but the reality is a lot of times the sellers haven't moved out. They've got movers there at the same time that you're doing a, you know, final walkthrough to look at the house. And, you know, you have to go on good faith. So I'm just saying to the sellers out there, make sure you clean the house. You're stressed, yes, but make sure you look inside the oven. You know, a few days prior, put it on the self-clean cycle. Make sure the refrigerator's wiped out. Because I'll tell you, if it's sparkling clean, and there is a problem, like a light bulb's burn out or just something that, you know, you have to bring to the buyer's attention, it's a lot less stressful on them. They're much more likely to be forgiving. If you leave them a dirty house with some problems and flaws and they take it anyways, God forbid they find something else. You know, all of a sudden their air conditioning's not working, and they call the guy whose sticker's on it, and he goes, yeah, I told them last year it didn't work, and you know, now it's the time that we're turning on air conditioners. They're not going to say, oh, well, you know, they probably didn't remember. They're going to say, well, you know, call their attorney. How do we get them to buy us a new air conditioner?
Yeah, and that's always a big thing is, if you're a seller, you've got those stickers on your furnace and that sticker on your air conditioner and your electrical panel. follow the advice of the people that you are at least leaving that sticker on, because that's the first phone call that gets made. If you've got an HVAC equipment that has been on, you know, a maintenance plan with a company, and then all of a sudden the new buyer moves in and they say, oh, yeah, we gave them a quote a year ago to replace the furnaces. We advised that they were past their serviceable life. It was time to get rid of them. Things get ugly fast. Things get real ugly fast when you've got a professional saying, we told them this was junk and now it doesn't work.
No. So, Mike, you had a rant earlier, and we're almost out of time, so I guess we'll probably save that. Jamie, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how do they reach you?
Yeah, call me, 585-944-8876.
And you give me a call at our office, 585-773-4001.
And I'm Jeff Schofield with RE/MAX Plus, and you can reach me via my cell, 600-5333. You can call or text. And we were going to talk about insurance repairs. So in the short amount of time, they have gotten really worse.
Yeah, we've got a client right now that's dealing with a lot of stuff that wouldn't even have shown up on a home inspection simply because the insurance companies are now coming in and hedging their bet because inspections haven't been done. And it sounds like it's probably going to be a big topic for next week because we're seconds away from going off the air here. But if you're an insurance agent or you are, dealing with insurance stuff, we'd love for you to give us a call next week so we can chat our way through that, because things are definitely that's definitely a thing that has changed post-COVID.
And the other thing too is when you're buying a house, you're spending all that money. You probably have money earmarked for new carpet, a new bathroom, a new kitchen, whatever you're going to do, or replace the roof. But when the insurance company comes out and says your basement windows are bad, you need to replace all your basement windows, nobody ever sits in their living room after dropping a couple thousand dollars on new basement windows going, oh, I feel much better about my house now.
Yep.
All right, folks, we'll see you next week.